Blog Talk Radio.
James Bostic here, Conservatives Perspective on the Patriot Nation Radio Network here at blogtalkradio.com. Blogtalkradio.com, that's where you go. You can check us out under the Patriot Nation Radio Network, or we've got a lot of links sprinkled all throughout social media, so we should be pretty easy to find. We do it live Tuesdays, Thursdays, 7 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. We also have a recorded version of the show that goes out over the Mojo 50 Radio Network, mojo50.com. It fundamentally your one-stop shop for the very best in libertarian and conservative talk radio on the internet anywhere, period, in the galaxy. It's that good. And ACP, of course, proud and humbled to be moving in that rarefied air. A couple days ago, a truck loaded with thousands of copies of Roger's Thesaurus crashed, losing the entire load. Witnesses were stunned, startled, aghast, taken aback, stupefied, confused, shocked, rattled, paralyzed, dazed, bewildered, mixed up, surprised, awed, dumbfounded, nonplussed, flabbergasted, astounded, amazed, confounded, astonished, overwhelmed, horrified, numbed, speechless, and perplexed. Moving on. Over the late, and there is no shortage, as you well know, by the multifaceted panoply of points of reference in terms of what's going on in the news and all these little different things. And everything is, you know, it's also convoluted. It's also nuanced. And there's backstories to everything. And at the end of the day, most of it, not all of it, but a large measure of it is it's theater. I've said this time and time again. I don't know who coined the phrase, but they were dead on the money when they said that politics, especially national politics, is show business for ugly people. And as I think about that statement, there are a couple of definitions of ugly, you know, and it isn't necessarily an ugly on the outside. It may not be an unattractive aesthetic that we're looking at, but maybe something darker and more fetid within their corrupt souls. Anyway, the New York Times, as advertised, what a bunch of Jew-hating commie SOBs there, huh? Unbelievable. These cats, and this is, they're getting their comeuppance. And what we see happening now, and this is why the media, in particular, the media, is so out of kilter, off the beam, distracted, disgruntled, agitated. Oh, I'm sorry, that was the Thesaurus thing. Never mind. For the last, well, 3 years, let's say 3 years, because this whole thing started when Donald Trump announced his candidacy for president, and these SOBs have lost their minds. And it's just gotten to the point where they've become this echo chamber. CNN, MSNBC, ABC, CBS, all the alphabets. And I'm even going to throw Fox in there because now that the boys, the Murdoch's boys, the old man, you know, he's kind of, he may even be dead. If he's not, he's probably damn close to it. But the boys are running the thing now, and they understand the business model and what's going to make them money. But their hearts, I don't believe, are in conservatism. And for a couple of years, Fox News has been dead to me anyway with some of the stances that they've taken. But all the networks, all of them, they've just been so blinded in their fear and their loathing and hatred of Donald Trump that they've become unhinged. And there's no other way to say it. I use that as a tagline. Some, you know, the Democrats, it's still crazier in hell. Nothing's changed. And it's the truth. They may be even crazier than hell. They might be a little bit crazier than that. And we'll be talking about some of that stuff as well. But back to the Times. Not dead air. Kool-Aid fruit punch. One of their political leaders, and they've been, you know, the old gray lady, the newspaper of record, Washington Times, and all the news that's fit to print. But nowadays, that's moved to all the news that rhymes with fit to print, but really is, you know, poop. It's a facade. I suppose to a lot of people, and there were probably a number in the last 100 years or so that the New York Times has been around, I'm sure there have probably been some stories back in the old-timey days when televisions ran on kerosene and had hand cranks on the sides of them. That's why people had so many kids in the old days, in the families, just so they could spell each other, hand cranking that TV so everybody could watch it. But you know, once upon a time, I'm sure there was probably legitimate journalism in all of the print industry as it existed in its particular era, whatever. But overall, it's yellow journalism at its most refined. It's antique white. It's ivory journalism. Okay, it's latte journalism. But it's always been, for the last 60 years, 65 years, probably since the end of World War II, an ideological hack sheet. And what we're going to talk about now is not necessarily new. What's new about it is the fact that we are seeing a publication like the New York Times, which has been called the newspaper of record. You know, this is the end all be all. We ain't gonna lie to you. Well, there's a guy who's been working there. His name is Tom Wright Piersanti, and Tommy Boy has been a senior staff editor at the Times for more than 5 years. If we are to trust his LinkedIn page. And according to his Twitter page, until yesterday, He oversaw the newspaper's political coverage. But what has been discovered? And the again, we have a backstory here, too, that ties into Breitbart. This guy, this Tom Wright Pierisanti, has made a series of particularly anti-Semitic and racist tweets over the years. Many of them you can still access. Some of them have been deleted. And a couple of weeks ago, there was a staff meeting at the New York Times. I know, man, I'm kind of jumping around on this. We're just going to have to hang tight. And in the staff meeting, the editorial board, I suppose, they had to come to painful conclusion that the collusion thing wasn't going to fly, man. There was no there. They spent 2 years yanking the collective chains of their readership. Collusion's coming, man. We're just around the corner. And you know that clip I've got. It's over. It's through. Trump is finished. The walls are closing. And it just, all this stuff. For what? Not even a fizzle, man. It just died. It just faded. Now, do these people have any sense of humility, of decency, of good breeding to say, hey, you know what, guys, we can't say that we missed this story because there was no story there, and we knew there was no story there, and we fronted this story as though there were a story there, and you know, but they can't say that because that would call for intellectual honesty. And we're not going to find that at the New York Times, at least on the editorial board. They just shift gears. They just shift gears. And they go, okay, well, the collusion thing didn't fly. I got it. He's a racist. Trump is racist. That's what we're going to say. Because of his stance, because of his pro-America, pro-American citizen stance when it comes to illegal aliens and individuals aforementioned crossing said border illegally, we're going to call him a racist. And I'll tell you what else we're going to do. We're going to call the people that agree with his policies, we're going to call them racist too. Get everybody on it. Stop the presses. I don't care what the main headline is. Put it at the top of the page. Trump, racist. And by God, that's what they did. I know that sounds, you know, kind of facetious, kind of an exaggeration. But fundamentally, yeah, that's how it happened. That's what went down. Hold on a minute. So thus the newspaper of record. But with the advent of, what do we want to call it? The alternative information sources that are out there. Breitbart is a good one. Drudge would be another one. Frontpagemag.com. Conservative Treehouse. The American Center for Greatness. Daily Caller. This program in its own really small way. But so much of all, you know, you can go. You don't have to go to NBC. You don't have to go to CNN. There's a wealth of information out there. And you know what else? If you learn to look for these things yourself, don't take my word for anything that I say on this show, ever. Glenn Beck, another crazy SOB, but I like Glenn. He's always said that. Don't take my word for it. Check it out yourself. That way you'll know for sure. Ain't going to be no bum steers here. We don't do that. I find these things that resonate with me. It's stuff I want to share with you because I feel you might be in some way, you know, interested to some degree. So being threatened by this new wave, this onslaught of alternative media, particularly podcasting, news aggregate websites like Drudge, like Breitbart, Loftier places like American Spectator, American Thinker, Front Page Mag, all this stuff is out there, and it scares the living daylights out of the New York Times. Because once upon a time, TV news, radio news, and newspaper, and I guess if you want to go back into the newsreel days, these were the gatekeepers of information. Those gates have been knocked aside, and these guys know that they're dinosaurs. Alternative news media is the meteor, the asteroid that crashes into their planet and brings about their demise. Unlike the dinosaurs, though, who did not understand or grasp what was happening to their environment, the establishment media knows all too well. And the New York Times had worked out a program for those that would be interested in boycotting and otherwise disrupting news sources like Breitbart. How to take them apart, how to bring them down, in other words. Well, Breitbart fought back. And what I'm sharing with you about this guy, Tom Wright Piersanti, was uncovered by Breitbart, and it has burned the New York Times. So they went from the collusion thing to trying to pin him on to being a racist now, because the collusion thing didn't work. The racism thing isn't going to work either, because what they've done effectively in calling Donald Trump a racist and then doubling down on that and saying, and anybody who likes Donald Trump is a racist, they just called out 63 million, maybe more, in 2020. But it was close to 63, almost 64 million Americans in 2016 said, no. We're not having no more Hillary. We're not having any more of this Barack Obama 2.0. No. We're stopping the ship. We're going to do what we can to make a course correction, get this thing turned around and getting back on course, heading towards our destiny as intended. And that's what's been happening. And in the process of these things happening, the establishment media is losing its credibility. And this is just another example of it. So Tommy Boy here and the editorial staff, the senior editorial staff say, all right, every story we do from now on is going to paint Donald Trump as a racist. In 2010, Tom Wright Piersanti said this. I was going to say crappy Jew year, but one of my resolutions is to be less anti-Semitic. This was on January 1st, 2010. So happy Jew year, you Jews. Another one from the evening of 2009, December 15, 2009, includes a photograph of a vehicle with what looks like a menorah, which is, of course, as you know, culturally and religiously associated with the holiday of Hanukkah. And the menorah is on the roof of the car. And Tom Piersanti says, who called the Jew police? These guys are the biggest hypocrites on earth. Now, this Piersanti guy was also, there was a hue and cry about a political cartoon with Benjamin Netanyahu as a dachshund with a yarmulke, and he was being, I can't remember, I think he was being walked by Donald Trump. But anyway, the inference was that Israel was Donald Trump's lapdog, which is a ridiculous statement. But this is nothing new. Again, this is the same paper who screwed their listeners for 2 years on this collusion thing, and now they've decided that a new policy is, since they can't get him on that, here's what we're going to do. We're going to attack him on race-based issues and everything that they can do to try and turn this president into being perceived as a racist, xenophobic, bigoted, orange bastard is exactly what they're going to do. But the people who are doing this, are the biggest racists, the biggest anti-Semites of all of them. And there's nothing new, at least with the times. Back in the early part of the 20th century, there was a correspondent for the New York Times by the name of Walter Duranty. And Walter Duranty is infamous or revered, depending on you know, which side of the journalistic coin you care to fall on. But he was notorious for violating the public trust by sending pro-Soviet, pro-communist stories home, pretending that all was well in Russia in those early days under Joseph Stalin, even though Stalin starved 6 million Ukrainians to death. And incomprehensibly, Walter Duranty won a Pulitzer Prize for telling these lies. He was a well-known Stalinist sympathizer, a Soviet propagandist, and fundamentally a blatant liar. Duranty's reports stated that the Soviets were ruling in the best interest of the people. He referred to Stalin as the greatest living statesman. He claimed that his time spent in the United Soviet Socialist Republic, Union Soviet Socialist Republic, represented a heroic chapter in the life of humanity. Stalin himself told Duranty, "You've done a good job in your reporting of the SSR, USSR." Now, initially when these things came out, he was looked at kind of critically. But it wasn't until 1980, 50 years after the fact, that the New York Times itself publicly acknowledged his failure. What was going on in Russia at this time? Was a series of agrarian reforms being put in place by Stalin. Six million people were starved intentionally. Famine was created in Ukraine. The man-made famine itself, that was just 6 million in Ukraine. The total, probably 12 million people. Now, other journalists were in Russia, were in Soviet Russia at the time, late 1920s, through the mid-1930s. This is when the great communist revolution was taking place. Stalin was Lenin's successor. He was consolidating power, and he was getting rid of the people he didn't like. So famine was engineered. Food simply removed from entire areas, in you know, huge areas in Russia, and the people left to starve, to die. And they did, to the tune of about 12 million. Other reporters were in the USSR at the time. Malcolm Muggeridge, Gareth Jones, there were other legitimate reporters, correspondents, are reporting back to their newspapers of what's happening, the truth about what's happening. Duranty called them liars. People are dying. I mean, literally falling over on sidewalks in cities in the Ukraine because there's no food. There's nothing to eat. 6 million people die. Walter Duranty, the New York Times, on the scene, boots on the ground, eyes in the area, says there is no famine or actual starvation, nor is there likely to be. Any report of famine in Russia is today an exaggeration or malignant propaganda. Enemies and foreign critics can say what they please. Weaklings and despondents at home may groan under the burden, but the youth and strength of the Russian people is essentially at one with the Kremlin's program, believes it worthwhile, and supports it, however hard be the sledding. You can't make an omelet without breaking eggs. Yeah, that's where it came from. Again, 12 million people are starving in vast swaths of Russian territory. Duranty says there is no actual starvation or deaths from starvation, but there is widespread mortality from diseases due to malnutrition. He was he was awarded the Pulitzer Prize for this. But what's happening? And this is why these people, not just the New York Times, I use the New York Times to illustrate this particular point. With their own hypocrisy, they've been a long time anti-Semitic leaning newspaper. Pro-communist. This is from late 1920s, early 1930s, when Duranty was doing this. Lying. Duranty knew what he was saying was a lie. The editors at the New York Times that he was submitting his stories to knew it was a lie. And yet they published it anyway, to prop up Stalin and the communist agenda. Newspaper of record. CNN has barely a million viewers a night. That's it. I know, they look huge. You think their reach is everywhere. This is CNN. No, a million people, max, at any given time, in prime time. That's it. Newspaper readership since the advent of the internet has dropped significantly because people are reading online. Honest to God, I can't tell you the last time I read a newspaper. I really can't. The Washington Post, the New York Times, the Philadelphia Examiner, all these different, you know, left-wing papers that have been out there in these major cities are becoming less relevant, less significant, literally by the news story. At no time in its history has the New York Times and its left-wing agenda, its anti-Semitic agenda, or its anti-Semitic tolerance and advocacy, ever been unmasked and stripped so bare. It enrages them. But there's not a whole lot they can do about it. And every time these stories come out, this is what's going to happen. What's finally happening is the conservative journalists are going back and they're looking at these left-wing snobs, these clowns, and they're catching them, they're hoisting them happily on their own petard. And no, I'm not talking about the guy from Star Trek. That's Picard. So, and they're going to try desperately to fight back. And this is one of the ways they're doing it. But it's nothing new. It's gone on for 100 years with these clowns. Down to the bottom of the hour. When we come back on the other side, as promised, we're going to talk about Joe Biden's brain. such as it may be. And a few other things. I don't know. It just depends on what happens with me. You know how I am. But we will be back with more of ACP right after this brief musical interlude.
Oh, when the sun beats down and burns the tar up on the roof, and your shoes get so hot you wish your tired feet were fireproof, under the boardwalk, down by the sea, yeah, on a blanket with my baby, that's where I'll be.
Under the boardwalk,
out of the sun,
under the boardwalk,
having some fun.
Under the boardwalk,
people walking above.
Under the boardwalk,
we'll be falling in love.
Under the boardwalk.
On the park you hear the happy sounds of a carousel. You can almost taste the hot dogs and french fries they sell.
Under the boardwalk,
people walking above.
Under the boardwalk,
we'll be falling in love.
Under the boardwalk, boardwalk.
This is the city. Los Angeles, California. Some people rob for pleasure. Some rob because it's there. You never know. My name's Friday. I'm a cop. I was working the day watch out of robbery when I got a call from the Acme School Bell Company. There'd been a robbery.
There's been a robbery.
Yes, sir. What was it?
My clappers.
Your clappers.
Yeah, you know those things inside a bell that makes them clang?
The clangers.
That's right, we call them clappers in the business.
A clapper caper.
What's that?
Nothing, sir. Now, can I have the facts? What kind of clappers were stolen on this caper?
They were copper clappers.
And where were they kept?
In the closet.
Uh-huh. You have any ideas who might have taken the copper clappers from the closet?
Well, just one. I fired a man. He swore he'd get even.
What was his name?
Claude Cooper.
You think
that, That's right. I think Claude Cooper copped my copper clappers. Kept in the closet.
You know where this Claude Cooper is from?
Yeah. Cleveland.
That figures. That figures.
What makes it worse, they were clean.
Clean copper clappers.
That's right.
Why do you think Cleveland's Claude Cooper would cop your clean copper clappers kept in your closet?
Only one reason.
What's that?
He's a kleptomaniac. Who first discovered the copper clappers were copped? My cleaning woman. Clara Clifford. That figures. Now let me see if I got the facts straight here. Cleaning woman Clara Clifford discovered your clean copper clappers kept in a closet were copped by Claude Cooper, the kleptomaniac from Cleveland. Now, is that about it? One other thing. What's that? If I ever catch kleptomaniac Claude Cooper from Cleveland who copped my clean copper clappers from kept in the closet... Yes? I'll clobber him.
All right. Some outstanding alliteration there this side. That's some of the best alliteration, actually, I've heard this side of Jim Jordan on the Fibber, McGee, and Molly program. James Bostic back here with it. Great TV. You know, TV sucks, doesn't it, guys? Seriously? I mean, really? You can't get that kind of stuff on TV today. No. But anyway, what we were talking about, welcome back, ACP, Conservative Perspective here on the Patriot Nation Radio Network. We do it twice a week live, 7 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. We have a recorded incarnation of the program that goes out Saturdays, 4 p.m. Eastern Time on Mojo50 Radio, mojo50.com. And it is fundamentally your one-stop shop for the very best libertarian and conservative talk radio to be found on the internet, period, end of story. That's it. Big names, super duper stars, up and comers, and even a couple old dudes like me having a lot of fun. And as I've said many times before, proud and humbled to be a part of that. Anybody seen Joe Biden's brain? Anybody? Joe, we talked to him about it, and he's not real sure what happened there. Joey. This gives me no joy. I mean, it really doesn't. He's not a good guy. He's not a decent guy. Certainly not an honest guy, as we've talked in the past. And we will be refreshing your memory on some of the more stellar aspects of Joe Biden's political career. The biggest problem, beyond his dishonesty, beyond his corruption, beyond his opportunism, beyond his greed, his avarice, beyond his creepiness, is his stupidity. The guy is a dope. I mean, he's a melon head. I don't know what else to tell you. No foreign policy expertise. To my knowledge, I don't know that there's been any he's been in Washington since, I don't know, maybe a couple of years after the Lincoln assassination. So probably 1867, 1868. He's been around in Washington that long. And I can't think, I'll look it up and see, but I can't think of any significant legislation that he sponsored or bills that he co-authored out there in all that time. He ran for president 3 times. The first time he ran, which I think was back in 1988, he had to drop out because it was discovered as a law student he had viciously plagiarized the writings of a British parliament member, Labour Party member named Neil Kinnock. And there were some other things on the campaign trail there in I guess, 84 or 88 that had been plagiarized, were found to be plagiarized as well. So that's why he dropped out. Then he ran again, he didn't do anything, and he wound up vice president. Still hadn't done anything. Made a lot of money for himself, made a lot of money for his family. We've talked about that. You can get a lot of this information in Peter Schweitzer's book, Secret Empires. A lot of it has come up to the forefront, the deals with China and his son Hunter, and the deals in the Ukraine, and all this stuff's coming to light. Now, it's been out there for a while. Schweitzer wrote about this a year and a half ago. So it's been out there for us. It's not exactly news to guys like us because, we've always been seeing it. But all of a sudden, now, Joe Biden, until recently, had a pretty commanding lead as Democrat presidential presumptive nominee. Starting to look a little closer now. And with good reason. But one of the things that we've seen in the last 20 years or so, 30 years or so, are the examples of Joe's stupidity. Because like I said, if you'll remember, he's a dope. That at this stage in the game, and he's 76, he would be 76, I think, assuming, of course, he wins the presidency. Got to hit the mute button. Hang tight. And we're back. One of those end of the summer colds. I still got a little chest congestion. I know that stuff's gross. I don't want to hack it all over you guys while I'm talking, so I just do that. So he would be 76 if he won the presidency. And anybody that pays any attention to politics, Joe Biden says a lot of stupid stuff because about that whole, being a dope thing. And I got a clip I want to play for you. You know how I am about clips. We might go extra innings on this. I might have to get deep into Joe's brain, man. I might have to run into the nooks and crannies there and see what screen doors have been left open and what's happening. But anyway, these are within the time of his vice presidency, and I guess up until today. It's a 2-minute clip. I got it off YouTube. I think it's MSNBC. But anyway, here it goes. These are things that Joe Biden says when he thinks he's saying regular stuff just like everybody else.
I dropped everything at the dump. It all worked out. And by the way, I got a second load. Guys coming. Anybody wants to help me unload? That Chuck Graham, state senator, is here. Chuck, stand up. Chuck, let him see you. Oh, God love you. What am I talking about? I tell you what, you're making everybody else stand up, though, pal. Thank you very much.
Yeah, because Chuck's in a wheelchair.
I tell you what, stand up for Chuck.
My mother believed and my father believed that if I wanted to be president of the United States, I could be vice president. My mother and father believed.
Look, John's last-minute economic plan does nothing to tackle the number one job facing the middle class. And it happens to be, as Barack says, a three-letter word, jobs. J-O-B-S, jobs.
Joe,
wait a minute, Joe.
Am I doing this again?
For the senior staff.
All yes. Right.
A number of the cabinet members have already.
My memory is not as good as Justice Roberts, Chief Justice Roberts. Does anyone have the... No, I...
And thank you, Dr. Pepper, and thank you, Chancellor, or Dr. Paper, and thank
Dr.
you,
Pepper.
Chancellor.
A man who will be the next president of the United States Barack America. But the Taoiseach knows a lot about it. His mom lived in Long Island for 10 years or so. God rest her soul. And although she's, wait, your mom's still alive as your dad's passed. God bless her soul.
Oh, Joey.
I gotta get this straight.
Now is the time to heed the timeless advice from Teddy Roosevelt. Speak softly and carry a big stick. End of quote. I promise you, the president has a big stick. I promise you.
Pow! Oh, my God. Okay. So, all right. Now, some of this stuff is comical. Some of this stuff is comical. And again, like I said, you know, that whole thing he's got going on. But there's, I think, and I'm sure you guys will agree, legitimate concerns when it comes to Biden's state of mind. And the other day I came across this article by Dr. Brian Junedeff, and he's a contributor at American Thinker and a couple other places. I usually pick up his stuff here at AT, and he's a doctor from Colorado. He's in Denver, Colorado, and he's just one of these kind of Renaissance raconteur types. He's a doctor, he's a radio host periodically, he's a editorializer, and just a pretty sharp guy and a pretty clean thinker. And that's the title of this article I'm going to share with you. Legitimate concerns about Joe Biden's state of mind. And as we see a lot in the news, and basically if when they're all boiled down, according to Real Clear Politics, Joe Biden up until recently has had a pretty healthy lead over the rest of the pack of these socialist wannabes. In a lot of these polls, they show him with as much as a double-digit lead over Bernie Sanders or Elizabeth Warren, although she's supposed to be making some inroads. But the establishment Democrats, the Schumers, the Pelosis, the Feinsteins, the Boxers, the Peg-Leg Petes, they're banking on what must be the guy's only real trade, and that is name recognition. More than anything else, he's a familiar name. Everybody knows who he is. He's got a long history in D.C., kind of like Jeb Bush, right there, you know, in the days before Donald Trump just put the Godzilla on him. But that was how the Republican establishment, the Bill Kristols, that's how they saw Jeb Bush. Everybody knows the name. He's been around. He's done the things. He's got the ins and outs. And so he was an establishment guy, too. And that's really the only thing Joe Biden's got going for him. And it's put him out in front of all these other people. And so he's got name recognition, and that's about it. I mean, even his wife, the other day she said, you know, well, yeah, I know you know, think about your candidate and her or his electability and who's going to win this race. She didn't talk about the great policy ideas he had. She didn't talk about his compassion, his vision for America. He's the best shot we have, you guys. So we need to get behind the dude. Fundamentally, the most lifelike of the corpses in the Democrat morgue. But you heard the clip that we played. And yeah, it's kind of a comedic thrust with that. But the elephant in the Joe Biden living room really is more than likely his mental status. Now, in this article, he says, as a disclaimer, I'm not a psychiatrist, and neither is the dude reading this. None of us are. Instead, we have observed him. We have seen him on the public stage over a number of years, as all of us have. And the opinions that are being formed here are based on easily available public information. Don't take my word for it. Look it up. You'll see it. Now, again, this is an opinion article, not what was that thing they did, the petition, 70,000 people in the mental health industry signed this petition saying that Donald Trump was crazy, that he was dangerous, and not one of the 70,000 mental health wing nuts had even been close enough to the president to look at him good, let alone examine him to the level necessary to form a professional opinion. And to this day, you hear it on the news all the time, okay? The president's mental status and his fitness is questioned every single day on cable television. So if we stop and consider this, and Joe Biden's their head guy, it should be fair game to ask legitimate questions about Joe Biden's mental state. You know what? You guys are going to have to sit tight for a minute, because we are going to be going into extra innings on this. I can see it now. Boom. Okay. Takes care of that. We can all breathe a little easier now. Joe Biden. The Alzheimer's Association defines dementia as an overall term that describes a group of symptoms associated with a decline in memory or other thinking skills severe enough to the point that it reduces a person's ability to perform everyday activities. Now, in this particular case, Joe Biden's everyday activities include running for the president of the United States. Also required as the second branch of this definition, at least two of the following core mental functions must be significantly impaired to be considered dementia. The first one, memory. Joe recently placed the Martin Luther King and Robert Kennedy assassinations in the late 1970s, despite both those events taking place back in 1968. Communication. At a recent campaign event in Iowa, Joe tripped over his words, as we heard, while speaking to voters, saying, "My long friend time friend, and she's a friend. She's been my friend in and out of public life." In focus and attention. Joe thought that he was vice president during the 2018 Parkland shooting. He also confused Theresa May with Margaret Thatcher, not once, but twice. And then while campaigning last week in New Hampshire, he thought he was in Vermont. We heard the clip where he was talking to Chuck Wagner, the wheelchair-bound Missouri State Senator, to stand up for a round of applause. No, what am I saying? God love you. You know, you're crippled. You can't stand up. But to be fair to Joe, I thought that recovery was pretty good. What else could you do? I mean, after you step in it like that. So I'm not gonna get him too harshly on that, but for comic fodder, yeah, that was pretty good. Dementia, of course, has many causes, from Alzheimer's to simply growing old. Brain surgery may also play a role. Joe Biden has had two brain aneurysms successfully treated about 31 years ago. His neurosurgeon at the time came, they drug this guy out. Dr. Vinny Boombatz. He says, and then trying to reassure the public, there's nothing wrong with Joe's mind, claiming he had no brain damage, as a string of gaffes have prompted observers to question his mental acuity. He went on to say, and I'm not making this part up, he is every bit as sharp as he was 31 years ago. I haven't seen any change. Coincidentally, as I told you before, 31 years ago, Joe Biden dropped out of the 1988 presidential race over incidents of plagiarism, both on the campaign trail and during his time at Syracuse University. Law school there. So I suppose we've got to give the neurosurgeon a pass, because technically he is correct, because fundamentally there hadn't been really any change in Joe's behavior over the last 31 years. But the Brain Aneurysm Foundation tells us this. Undergoing treatment for a brain aneurysm is a major life event that continues long after discharge from the hospital. Survivors face the potential for physical, emotional, and cognitive changes that could be minor or significant, short-term or long-lasting. Among the symptoms after an aneurysm treatment, hearing loss, fatigue, vision problems, slow reaction time, social and emotional changes could also occur, including loss of emotional control and confusion. Other deficits include physical and mental fatigue, cognitive problems, articulation problems, behavioral changes, and lastly, memory involves many parts of the brain, and if a brain aneurysm rupture or treatment damages any of those areas, your memory will be affected. Joe Biden demonstrates many of these deficits. Are they related to his aneurysms or simply the fact that he's 76 years old? We don't know. But you know what? He wasn't always 76 years old, and his behavior now is much the same as it was when he was younger. Nearly 12 years ago, during the 2008 presidential campaign, a 64-year-old Joe Biden was a gaffe machine, to the point that Barack Obama asked, how many times is Biden going to say something stupid? Well, 12 years later, and Joe ain't missed a lick yet. And just as an aside, why are Joe Biden's misstatements called gaffes when President Trump exaggerates or embellishes, as he is prone to do? The media fact checkers come out in force and gaffes become lies. CNN recently proclaimed Trump's lies are getting bolder. CNN, okay? CNN says Trump's lies are getting bolder. That's rich. Coming from the same network that told the entire world for 2 years that Donald Trump colluded with the Russians to steal the election from Hillary Clinton. Whether Biden's state of mind is due to his aneurysms, his age, his core personality, these things are legitimate concerns when considering a future president of the United States. How much worse will this get next summer if he is the Democrat nominee, trying to keep up with the Energizer Trumpster? Will the media take any of this seriously, or will they just go ahead and dismiss it as they always have, as just Joe being Joe? The same The same psychiatrists describing Trump's psychotic-like state have nothing to say about Joe Biden's state of mind. Maybe Democrat primary voters will force this issue. And Joe Biden actually winds up the 2020 candidate. Then his mental state would be on full display for months before the election. And we'll all see if this is just old Joe being Joe or if it's something a bit more concerning. Let me see if I can find it. Crazy psych. Okay, yeah. And what he was talking about there at the end of that article, again, Dr. Brian Jundeff, Denver, Colorado. CR. They say there's some way on Blog Talk to put all this crap together in one area where you can, and you don't have to do what I'm doing right now, which is bloviating and killing time till I find the right clip. You can put them all in one group, but I haven't done that or don't know how, and I don't know if I'm going to be bothered to do that or not. Anyway, I got it. This guy's name is Dr. Alan Francis. And Dr. Alan Francis, this is going to blow you away, was a former head of psychiatry or psychology, I think, for Duke University, I believe. And he's on, and this is, I love this. You want to talk about an oxymoron? CNN's reliable sources. Excuse me. CNN's reliable sources with that George Costanza looking Brian Stelzer. This is how far out they are, man. This is how far. And again, this is a network that's got about a million people at any given time, even prime time. HGTV beats these guys out. Cartoon Network beats CNN. Do you see what I mean? About an echo chamber? And these guys are just, they just jump around on each other saying this stuff and humping each other's legs over how bad, you know, who hates Trump the worst. Anyway, here's, I'm going to have to put the earplug in for this one because I might have to do some commentary with this guy. Dr. Alan Francis, former head of psychiatry, psychology at some school somewhere. Check him out.
Have published in this book, you say it's dangerous to be talking this way. Why?
Well, I think that medicalizing politics has three very dire consequences. The first is that it stigmatizes the mentally ill. I've known thousands of patients. Almost all of them have been well-behaved, well-mannered, good people. Trump is none of these. Lumping the mentally ill with Trump is a terrible insult to the mentally ill, and they have enough problems and stigma as it is. The second issue is that calling Trump crazy hides the fact that we're crazy for having elected him, and even crazier for allowing his crazy policies to persist. Trump is as destructive a person in this century as Hitler, Stalin, and Mao were in the last century. He may be responsible for many more million deaths than they were. He needs to be contained, but he needs to be contained by attacking his policies, not his person. It's crazy for us to be destroying the climate our children will live in. It's crazy to be giving tax cuts to the rich that will add trillions of dollars to the debt our children will have to pay. It's crazy to be destroying our democracy by claiming that the press and the courts are the enemy of the people. We have to face these policies, not Trump's person. Now, it's absolutely impossible. You can bet the House that the Congress, that Pence, that the Cabinet will never, ever remove Trump on grounds of mental unfitness. That will never happen. Discussing the issue in psychological name-calling terms distracts us from getting out the vote. And the important thing is to get Trump out of office.
But I'm not talking about name-calling. I'm talking about asking questions that are really uncomfortable. I'm not saying we have the answers. I'm saying we need to bring it up.
Well, the problem is that the diagnoses offered have been amateurish. They don't apply to Trump. They will never get Trump out of office. And I'm worried that in dealing with the psychological motivations and the inaccurate psychiatric diagnoses, we lose the focus on getting out the vote. And that's much more important at this point.
So, Dr. Lee, your response?
Someday I'll have me a chauffeur and a block-long limousine, EO11, EO11. Someday I'll have me a penthouse, stacks and stacks of Bowling Green, EO11, EO11. It's all a state of mind, whether or not you find that place down there or heaven. In the meantime, EO, EO, EO 11, EO 11, EO 11. Show me a man without a dream, and I'll show you a man that's dead, real dead. Once I had me a dream, but that dream got kicked in the head. Dream dead. I nearly had me that chauffeur and that block-long limousine, EO11, EO11. I nearly had me that penthouse, all them stacks of Bowling Green, E11, 11. Some judge is gonna say I'm putting you away for 4 score years and 7. In the meantime, EO11.
Yeah. I will not be silenced, damn it. That happens sometimes. I apologize for the technical mumbo-jumbo that goes on here. It just happens. That's Blog Talk Way. You know, it ain't a podcast unless I get cut off, it seems like. Love you, Blog Talk. Mean it. So we were talking about this nutbag psychologist. And I say this based on my own personal experience, which admittedly isn't that extensive, but I have come in contact with a wide spectrum of people in my time. All walks of life, all creeds, all nationalities, from all kinds of different places. But I think that psychiatrists, psychologists, counselors, and so many, and I'm using my air fingers quote here, the mental health industry, the profession, are some of the kookiest buggers out there that I've ever met. I don't know if it's because they have immersed themselves in all these various conditions of neurotic behavior and motivations and this and that. And then the whole thing is just so very psychological. I don't know if it's because it just leaks off on them and they begin to project those things that they've been exposed to, or if they're just naturally kooks, which is what I'm inclined to believe, and water seeks its own level. Okay? If you're a kooky person, odds are you're going to be on one side or the other in the mental health industry. Oh, my God, these people. Nobody. And again, you Donald Trump gets questioned. Again, this guy gets questioned every day in the media. Goes out in 90 degree weather in Washington, 90 degree Washington, D.C. weather. For an hour and a half, doing a presser with all the root weevils from the media, taking questions, totally impromptu, off the cuff. He is matching wits with every one of those guys, and I guarantee you just about all of them are standing there with some kind of, you know, whiz-bang gotcha question that they're going to trip Donald Trump, but they're going to be the cat that trips Donald Trump up with their clever question, and it doesn't happen. It never happens. Because if it had happened, they would be crowing, man. They would be screaming about it. The proof is in the pudding. Google Joe Biden gaffes. There are literally pages of them, individually, in a compilation like that audio montage I played for you earlier. Nonstop. It is a legitimate point to make. Now, Joe Biden, let's see, Donald Trump is 71. Is that right? 71, I think. So, basically, Donald Trump is on par with I think Ronald Reagan was 70. When, or 69 or 70, when he assumed the office of the presidency, making him at that time the oldest man to be given, administered the oath of office. This is a dynamic, energetic, vibrant guy. Joe Biden, okay, looks like, who's that dude? Walter, the ventriloquist. Jeff Dunham. He looks like Jeff Dunham's the dummy Walter. Now, like I said, a lot of people have put these gaffes up, and we've laughed at them tonight. And I'm not going to lie, I've laughed at a lot of the dumb things that Joe had. A three-letter word, jobs, J-O-B-S. Right. Okay. I mean, and I'm not gonna apologize for it. When you're in the arena, as it is, and it was something I learned very early on in my radio days. A buddy of mine, who was a childhood friend, and he's been a broadcaster for 40 years. He was born into it. His family, his dad was a DJ. He's a DJ, and he said, you know, what you say is what you say. You can't undo it. You can't push the poop back up into the mule once it's out. You just can't do it. And there it is. So you always have to be thinking or you know, thinking about something anyway. I mean, even if it's just thinking, I hope I don't say anything stupid. I'm gonna try not to say anything stupid, because you do. I the one thing I like about the recorded program that I do is when I screw the moose, it's not a big deal. I mean, if it's a really egregious moose screwing, then I can just bloop, delete it. It's gone. It never happened. And we do it over. But here now, Tuesdays and Thursdays at 7 p.m. Eastern Standard Time here on blogtalkradio.com. What you say is what you say. And if you screw it up, there you go. You just got to keep on trucking with it. And like I said, the mindset is not screw up a whole lot. And don't get too excited when you do. Let me say this. Fledgling podcasters out there that are thinking about this, it took me 2 years. I dithered and farted around for 2 years before I decided to do what I'm doing. And don't do that. If you want to try it, try it. You can get a microphone for a little bit of nothing. Shoot, man, you can probably do the whole thing from a smartphone nowadays, or a tablet or an iPad. You don't even need that kind of stuff. There are platforms all over the place where you can get your thing out and do it. And yeah, go ahead. And like I said, don't worry too much when you screw up, because you're gonna screw up. But over time, if you really love what you're doing and it means something to you, you won't. It'll just be an unconscious thing. It'll be inculcated in you. Well, I guess if I'm going to talk about this kind of crap, I'm probably done for the evening. ACP heard here Tuesdays, Thursdays, 7 p.m. Eastern Standard Time, Blog Talk Radio at the Patriot Nation Radio Network. We have a recorded version of shows I was just talking about on Mojo50Radio.com, Mojo50.com. That's where we go. Been a great time this evening. Enjoyed it. Thanks for bearing with me. I don't ordinarily go long, and I don't get the opportunity to very much, except on Tuesdays here when Mark does his Monday show. I do my Tuesday, and then Thursdays we're back to back from 7 to 9. So I don't always get, you know, Thursdays is out. I can't go into extra innings unless I want to do a show on Friday. So every now and then it's like that. Thanks for the opportunity to spend some time with you. We will be back here Thursday, 7 p.m. Eastern Standard Time, taking a look at things as we do through a conservative perspective. Until then, God bless you. God bless America. And we'll see you then.